Yeah. I know you looking for that fire. I got that John Blaze shit though. Yo, I know y'all just want 216, so I'm just gonna spit it like that. For real. So that's exactly what you getting. Me spitting a couple written verses. The first is about Quentin, young and wild. Brung a child on this planet he doesn't claim. Scoop chicks using his cousin name and plays a dozen games.
Thinks welcome, everyone. We're back. Like it's the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hanks. I cover the NFL for Sports on Earth and The Comeback, and the Cleveland Browns for Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report. As always, my co-host Brian returns.
Hey, what's going on now?
It's been a while, obviously,
since
our last edition of this podcast. We took a nice extended break during the offseason. A lot, of course, has gone down in that period of time. Free agency, the draft, all of these things, all of which we have ample time, ample downtime the next couple of months to dive deeply into. So that's going to be pretty exciting. We're just under 100 days away from the 2016 NFL regular season kicking off. And we're getting down to it. The weather's beautiful in the meantime, so we have beautiful weather, and then we have football.
Well, we've just come over the crest of the mountain of the off season.
Yes,
and we can see the NFL Valley down there.
It's a downhill
drive.
We
should just coast all the way in.
We'll coast all the way in. So we're going to start with our little comeback here, and talk about quarterbacks, because quarterbacks, of course, are always an area of fascination around the league, considering obviously the high-profile nature of the position, the importance of the position for each team, and how desperate teams can be in order to acquire even a competent quarterback as their starter. Let's talk about the draft. Let's talk about the top two quarterbacks taken in the draft, because both were results of trade-ups. Initially, the Tennessee Titans had the number one pick in this year's draft, and the Cleveland Browns had the number two pick. Both those teams traded out of the number one and two spots. The Los Angeles Rams moved up to number one and targeted Jared Goff, who they drafted. And then you had the Philadelphia Eagles move up to number two. They are taking Carson Wentz with that pick. Now, these are interesting situations because these are two teams that had seemingly stability, at least in the short term.
They had viable guys.
Viable guys, at least in a short-term basis at the quarterback position. Of course, the Eagles had Sam Bradford. They were considering him as their starter. And in fact, in early March, signed him to a two-year $35 million extension with $22 million in guaranteed money. The kind of money that would make you assume, okay, well, at least for the short term, they're comfortable, at least maybe for 2016, just in terms of the cap hit and all of that and the dead money, that they would be turning to Bradford for 2016 at the very least. And that maybe, it's just a two-year deal because of Bradford's injury history, and make it kind of a prove-it situation, like he can stay healthy and effective for 16 straight games. And then a week later, they go and sign Chase Daniel, presumably to be Bradford's backup, three-year, $21 million deal, $7 million average per year, kind of normal.
For a backup,
backup kind of thing. And so you thought, okay, so it's all set here with the Eagles. But then, essentially, a week before the draft, they make that trade with the Cleveland Browns, and the writing's on the wall. Obviously, quarterback is the priority there. You know, we've got a new head coach now that Chip Kelly is out, Dan, is his name Dan?
Peterson?
Doug Peterson.
Doug Peterson.
There we go. Doug Peterson taking over. And obviously he's interested in having a young quarterback, a quarterback of the future, somebody that they can groom. This was not surprisingly, unpleasant experience for Sam Bradford. He wasn't happy about it. He was looking to get traded. The problem though is that at that point in the off season, not a lot of willing trade partners, not to take on that salary. You know, he's making, $12.5 million this year, potentially up to $22.5 million next year. And that's just money, frankly, nobody had or wanted to pay at that late point in the year. Meanwhile, you've got Jared Goff in Los Angeles now. You know, Nick Foles, he's only costing about $8.75 million this year. He's got a voidable 2017 contract, so chances basically saying the 17 or the 13 or whatever million dollars that he's set to make next year, he's not going to make. It's a moot point. But it seemed prior to this trade-up that the Rams were comfortable having some sort of quarterback battle between Case Keenum and Nick Foles for the starting job. But now you've got Jared Goff in the mix, and among those three, it to me it seems like Goff is on the path to be the week one starter. As compared to in Philadelphia, I think that Wentz isn't going to be starting in week one. I think that the goal is to have Bradford serve as the starter and be comfortable with that, and hopefully he stays healthy for the entire season. Or maybe he struggles late and they can throw Wentz in there then.
Yeah, I'd say the more curious of these situations is Philadelphia. LA makes a lot more sense to me because, one, you know, Nick Foles and Case Keenum, you know, weren't exactly the type of guys that you'd build your team around, you know. They were just there. And, you know, in Foles, when he did start last year, I think he had a game or two. I think he was pretty good. But, like, other than that, he was just kind of okay.
Yeah, I mean, as compared to, you know, when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles the seasons prior to that, where he flashed some really impressive abilities, it didn't really translate.
I mean, he might even have flashed a little bit last year in
right.
St. Louis, but but you know, nothing. It wasn't like wowing everybody.
Right.
And he's relatively cheap as far as if he was going to be your starter, and he's under $9 million. That's, you know, it's relatively cheap for starting
quarterback.
It's
extremely inexpensive for a starting
quarterback. Sorry, I was sarcastically using relatively there, but regardless, you know, they're moving to LA. It's they're going to have a new stadium in a couple years. They're trying to reingratiate themselves with that fan base.
Sure. So why not bring in this young?
You get this young,
right?
Young kid who
number
you
one
know,
overall pick,
arguably was the better of the two, depending on who you talk to, because everybody had their opinion, but it was one of the top two at least.
Sure.
And you know he's from Cal, so you're getting you know some of that you know West Coast love out there, and like it's just it makes a lot of sense for them to make a move up. To get that guy.
Sure.
With Philly, you've already put a bunch of money into Sam Bradford.
I mean, in this offseason, Philadelphia has basically committed a maximum if it all plays out this way. Obviously, it's not going to. But they were willing to put together two quarterback deals worth, you know, $56 million over the next 3 years. 2 years for Bradford, 3 years for Chase Daniel. And then
they spent a bunch of picks to move up.
And then spent a ton of picks. Mm-hmm. A ton of picks, including a second rounder in 2018 to the Cleveland Browns, which I think is the cherry on the top of that sundae. They spend all of these picks to move up. They spend all this money on two quarterbacks. One, Chase Daniel, is, I guess, the guy pegged to be the backup for the next couple of years. A guy in Bradford who's basically a one-year bridge if he can stay healthy and effective this year.
Yeah, Chase Daniel made sense. He was with Peterson in Kansas City.
Yep.
And
it's a known quantity,
so he like, yeah, he knew the system, blah, blah, blah. You bring him on, and like you said, you're paying him like a backup. Bradford, you're paying him more like a starter. And
especially, you know, this year and next year, obviously, when you look at it, though, when you talk about the dead money charges, it's not going to cost the Eagles $22.5 million to cut him next year. But that's what his cap hit would set to be next year.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And so I don't know. I guess they just kind of looked at the situation where I'm assuming that they had insider intel saying that, you know, LA was definitely going with Goff and that Wentz was available and that they were just smitten with Wentz and to the point where they liked him long term more so, even though that they had already invested some money into these other quarterbacks. It was just maybe it was just one of those things where the opportunity presented itself and they jumped on it just to, you know,
have that long-term
because
quarterback
possibility. Yeah, and they were just really into Wentz, and that's the only thing that makes sense.
And you cannot rely on Sam Bradford, because even if Sam Bradford goes out there the first 6 weeks of the season and looks the part of the guy that at one point was the number one overall draft pick, week seven, something happens to his knee. You know what I mean? You can't mm-hmm. even rely on him staying healthy.
Yeah,
all season. I think
exactly.
That's fair to say. I mean, it sounds unfair, but we all know about Bradford's past.
Yeah, and
so.
I mean, and I don't know. Again, it's not like we're talking about someone who's been entrenched as a starter, you know, for a long time at this on this team, and someone who's like leads the league in anything. You know what I mean?
Especially when you got you're also talking a new coaching staff.
Sure.
In place.
Right. Exactly.
But you can also understand why Bradford would be a little miffed, considering you know just a couple of months after inking this deal, they you know a little while after inking this deal, they make the trade with the with the Browns.
I mean it. I'd say it's obvious he's going to be upset about it, but at the same time, you know, he, like you said, he's got what, from the contract they signed 3 months ago, $22 million guaranteed.
Right.
And if that means that all you're going to do is come in and try your hardest to hopefully have the job, but if it doesn't, you're going to do your best to contribute to the team and help bring along the young guy or whatever, you know, you're getting paid well to do it.
Exactly.
So, and obviously that being paid so well is going to inhibit your ability to get traded somewhere to a different situation where you might have a little bit better chance long term to be the guy. But the question is, how much long term is left for Bradford? You know, he's been in the league for 5 or 6 years now. He's had, like you said, a lot of injury history. He hasn't ever quite, I wouldn't say, lived up to a number one pick.
Right.
And injuries or otherwise, you know, he hasn't quite shown this ability to be this guy that you can build your team around.
Right.
And so it's
virtually guaranteed at this point that wherever he's playing in 2017, it's not going to be in Philadelphia.
And I don't see why anybody would expect that at this point. So
And Foles is another guy who's upset, understandably, because he was already going into a situation where at the end of 2015, basically all the talk about the Rams was they really like Case Keenum. You know,
right.
There wasn't a lot of talk about Nick Foles. There was just a lot of talk about, you know what, they really do like Case Keenum. And so you've got Foles making a very low amount of money for a potential starting quarterback, knowing already that he's going into this training camp battle with Case Keenum, whom the coaching and front office staffs clearly like.
What?
But then now you're adding another guy in the mix, and you're making it virtually impossible for Foles to be a starter.
I mean, I can understand him being upset about that, but how do you not see that?
Yeah, exactly.
If they're not falling over themselves about Nick Foles and saying, man, as soon as we get Nick Foles back from injury, he's going to be our guy going forward and all this. If you knew you were heading into a battle with Case Keenum, like, why are you surprised at all that they traded
right
up to draft?
Yeah, he hasn't shown up to any of the OTAs,
exactly,
any of the voluntary workouts, any of that right now. It's looking like the Rams are probably going to try to find a trade partner. You know, and it's possible when you talk about an $8.75 million cap hit, that's nothing crazy for a quarterback. And if somebody gets hurt and somebody needs a better backup, I could see a team.
Yeah, he's making backup dollars.
He's
is what
making
it is.
Backup dollars.
So if
good backup dollars,
like,
at that.
And like you said, if a starter goes down, or even like someone who is a team that's really wants to rely on their backup, you know, and that guy goes down, then potentially there's a trade partner for you. But Bradford's obviously a lot harder to trade than Foles in my mind.
Yeah. Because Bradford just has too much money on that deal. No team really wants to take on $12.5 million in cap hit right now. You know, and he's already been traded, and they've had to rework deals with him, and it just gets complicated.
Probably the most surprising thing was just the fact that they gave him that much money in March in the first place, a month and a half before the draft or whatever it was, just because
with the thought in mind of, hey, maybe the Browns will let us.
Well, that's
two.
What I'm saying is I don't even know if they were thinking about trading at that. I would guess that they weren't, and they were just saying, all right, well, we're going to be set with Bradford. We'll just pay him something and move on. And it's like, you know, if you're that far out, if you're only a few weeks from the draft, you know, you didn't have to sign Bradford at that point. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. It's to me, it would have made a little bit more sense to just wait and see how the draft shook out before you try and re-sign Bradford.
I think also part of it, though, was like this was done on March 1st, and 7 days later, 8 days later, they signed Chase Daniel. And maybe by then, in that part of early March, the Browns pick wasn't on the table yet. It wasn't on the trading block, and they were still considering using that number two pick. So you can't trade with somebody until you know that they're like open for the trade.
Well, I'm not necessarily saying they should have made the trade then. I'm saying that they should have maybe at least held back on re-signing Bradford until they saw how the draft shook out, and that because you can always re-sign him after the fact.
True.
unless they thought that that was going to damage their negotiating position. But who knows?
One of the more intriguing quarterback situations this offseason is what has gone down with the Denver Broncos. You know, Broncos coming off of a Super Bowl victory with, you know, we all had basically the knowledge that Peyton Manning was going to retire after that game, and he subsequently did. But we all sort of assumed, right, okay, Brock Osweiler, you know, he stepped in, he started seven games for the injured Manning, played pretty well. It seemed kind of inevitable that they would do whatever they needed to do in order to get a deal done with him because he was heading into free agency. At the same time, of course, there was the issue of needing to franchise tag Von Miller and a lot of other guys that, you know, needed fed, essentially, and there wasn't a lot of cap space in Denver relative to other teams. But what really surprised me is that they were pretty okay with letting him go to Houston, sign with Houston. I can see why. It ended up being a four-year, $72 million deal with $37 million guaranteed. And he has a $12 million cap hit this year that balloons to near $20 million or something like that next year. So I can understand why the Denver Broncos weren't going to pay him that. This is a guy who, while he's been in Denver for 4 years, his only starts, his seven starts, came this past season. He's essentially he's not a rookie in terms of, okay, you know, he's been able to study the playbook, work on the field, study behind Peyton Manning, for example, but he doesn't have a lot of starts under his belt, and, you know, a $72 million max contract for seven starts, you know, essentially an average of 10 million plus per game, is a really rich deal. And so at this point, the Denver Broncos seem content, unless something maybe happens with Nick Foles or something, seem pretty content with rolling with Mark Sanchez, who they acquired in the offseason, and having him backed up by rookie Paxton Lynch, who they drafted this year. I think that the situation in Denver is more beneficial for Mark Sanchez and more mutually beneficial for Denver and Mark Sanchez than Osweiler and Houston, at least, you know, on paper at this point right now, from my opinion on the matter.
I didn't understand the Osweiler contract. I mean, like you said, I expected what you expected. They drafted him, I don't know, third round, fourth round a couple years ago, and brought him up under Peyton, and he was learning and developing. He got an opportunity last year. He looked pretty good, but didn't blow me away, but he looked okay, and certainly somebody that they could probably try and work with in the future. And, you know, Houston went out and paid him like he's already done something, and I never understood that. And I certainly understand where Denver's coming from, saying, you know, I mean, especially if anybody knew how much to not pay him, it was the people that he had been that drafted him and developed him for the last few years.
Right,
so,
and they determined that would not be financially.
They knew
their
ceiling
interests.
With it, and I get it.
Yeah.
And no, I definitely think that it's funny that you know, Houston kind of similar teams to Denver now, in that there's some questions around the quarterback. They have solid defenses. You know what I mean? I'd say Denver's
good receivers and a strong run game. But I would say that Denver,
Denver's got a better run game.
And a better defense, front to back. I think that really benefits Mark Sanchez.
Sure.
Because, you know, we can make fun of him, butt fumble. You know, he's done a lot of ridiculous and stupid like things, and he's been sort of a butt of jokes over the past few years. But, you know, we forget, like, he was the quarterback for the Jets when they were going to the AFC Championship games. They were going to the playoffs. And it was not just because – it wasn't because Sanchez was lighting up the universe here. It was because the Jets had a really good run game. And the Jets had a really good defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that took the pressure off of him. And then he can just be kind of a caretaker quarterback in these situations.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
And that's the situation he's walking into in Denver. An elite defense, a really strong run game, good receivers to throw to when he needs to.
And that's Kubiak's game plan, is to run the ball, play defense, and, you know, roll your quarterback out, keep him, you know, try and keep him from getting hit a lot. You know, you don't put too much on him.
Sure.
And, I think it sets up well for them. I don't expect, even though Peyton's not there, I don't expect him to go back and win the Super Bowl again, but I don't expect them to fall off to be the bottom of the league at this point. I think that they could be solidly in the middle to more than that, depending on how much he limits them and how good that defense still is.
Meanwhile, I don't think that Osweiler is particularly the missing piece that the Texans needed. Obviously, they needed
to
improve.
Like he was.
They paid him like he was, and I think that's a sign of desperation because mm-hmm. What else was the Texans quarterback situation going to be? You know, what mm-hmm. what other options did they have?
Because they certainly couldn't trade up for one of the top two.
Right. their option was to try to pursue the free agent quarterback that they thought was the best
mm-hmm.
and to try to pay him in a way that lures him in. And that's what they did with Osweiler. And, you know, Houston has a good defense. I wouldn't say it's as good as Denver's, but they have a good defense. And Houston's got some good receivers, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had a good run game in the past, but there's a lot of question marks there, in my opinion. And also, the defense is good up front, but it's not as good front to back. You're talking the secondary,
mm-hmm.
Which was a huge boon for the Broncos because they had that vicious pass rush and a really strong secondary. And even in those situations, there were times where Osweiler seemed kind of out of his depth and things like that. And clearly, like a younger, less experienced quarterback. So if
sure.
you're essentially putting him in a situation where he's the starter for Denver Light, let's say,
mm-hmm.
you know, how is that?
What's that going to look like?
What's that going to look like? And I mean, I could be proven wrong. You know, Osweiler could go in there and at the very least, you know, back when Matt Schaub wasn't having the yips and throwing the picks prior to that, you know, where they could win games and they could win the division
mm-hmm.
under that kind of play. And if they can get maybe that out of Osweiler, you know, that's a way.
Well,
to
a big question will be, you know, what's that whole offense look like? They don't have Arian Foster anymore, but they haven't really been able to rely on him for the last couple of years anyway,
right.
And they haven't been able to get much out of the other running backs that they've had there. So they went out and got Lamar Miller from Miami.
I think it's a good fit. I think Lamar Miller has a chance to really do something.
Potentially, and that's what I'm saying, is that's kind of I'd say that's the X factor there, is how much will their run game be improved? Because I mean, unless Osweiler has been limited from his time in Denver backing up Peyton and, you know, working in that system, that he gets to Bill O'Brien and just flourishes, you know, I'd say that's a little unrealistic to expect that.
I don't think it's realistic to expect because it's June 2nd. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Well, yeah, obviously.
Obviously. So, I mean, there's time to amend these predictions, but I think that the situation is just a lot better for Sanchez in Denver than it is in Houston for Osweiler.
Yeah.
Another quarterback that was kind of tied into this whole mess for a little while was Colin Kaepernick out in San Francisco. He had been very vocal about wanting to be traded, but there was an hourglass on that because his contract, his salary was going to guarantee in early April, and if they couldn't get that deal done because they were going to trade him to Denver, they were trying to get a trade together with Denver, but Denver would, if Denver's not going to pay
Osweiler too much,
Osweiler 4 years, $72 million, you know what I mean? They're not going to accept a $17 million cap hit for Colin Kaepernick.
Well, no, he would have had to restructure before the trade.
They needed him to either restructure or take a salary cut before any trade could go down, and he was unwilling to do that.
Right.
And because at the very least, he gets to be unhappy but better paid in San Francisco, I guess. And that's the situation he's in now. And we're gonna it's round two, Kaepernick versus Gabbert again.
Yeah, and that's
Blaine Gabbert.
I'd say that
and it's with Chip Kelly, who we've heard various conflicting reports of Kaepernick doesn't like this at all and Kaepernick likes this. So who knows?
There's such a mystery now with Chip out there.
You throw Chip Kelly into that situation
what's going to happen.
And with the way the front office mm-hmm. and the ownership handle things, who knows how this is going
to
go.
No, but I mean, if Kaepernick really wanted out that bad, he would have figured out the money to get out of there.
Yeah.
And because the money was limiting him. And it's not like he wasn't going to make good money if he went somewhere else. Not quite as good, but he was going to make still NFL dollars. And probably would have got paid okay, certainly.
I know, but I also understand why he's trying to protect himself a little bit. Only
sure.
because when you look at the entirety of his contract, it's that pay as you go style contract with the April 1st escalators. So, you know, there's no cap hit if they cut him before a certain date. You know, before that April 1st date. So while he's on this 117 or whatever million-dollar deal, if they cut him before April 1st of 2017, he's only going to make $31 million of that.
Right.
So I understand that he doesn't want to take a pay cut, that he'd rather just get squeeze as much out of this, like, you know, team friendly, not so player friendly contract that he's mm-hmm. under right now. And even though
Gabbert, you know, I'd say performed better than I think most people would have expected last year.
In the time that
we saw him,
it was better than what I saw out of him in Jacksonville. Sure.
For sure, and
he
and
looked a little less afraid out there.
Yeah, exactly. And but I'd say even though there's that, I still expect Kaepernick to win this job when it comes down to it. And it's not just about Chip Kelly and, you know, running the, as the quarterback or anything like mm-hmm. that. I can see those two figuring a way to make it work, or at least enough.
If they can put together an offense that can move the ball and they start winning games, you know, Kaepernick and Kelly, it'll be water under the bridge, you know. Like their differences will smooth out a little bit.
Sure.
If they can win games, because winning makes everything better. But if they don't, or if Kaepernick doesn't win that job, or he perceives losing that job as a slight to himself and not a comment on his abilities or whatever,
right?
We're gonna have a few unhappy Kaepernick stories peppering the.
It'll be a fun story to watch
season. So this brings us to a couple interesting, final two interesting quarterback stories, or three stories I want to bring up here. Cleveland Browns. So we all know Cleveland Browns have a new head coach, new coaching staff, new front office. You know, they divested themselves of the Johnny Manziel situation fairly early on in that process. That did still leave them with numerous quarterbacks on that roster: Josh McCown, Connor Shaw, Austin Davis, and then they signed RG3. But, you know, with them initially having that number two overall pick, of course, the Browns constantly searching for a quarterback are linked to Goff or Wentz. But then they traded out, and they didn't bother with the quarterback position until later on, taking Cody Kessler. Kessler might be in the mix to start this year. I'm sure that they'll throw him into the competition, but at this point, it seems like it's going to come down to RG3 and Josh McCown, which to me is interesting, because initially I thought, okay, they might cut Josh McCown or try to find a trade partner. But now, at this point, it seems like he is a good candidate to remain on that 53-man roster. You have veteran experience. You have mentorship abilities, things, you know, an extra coach, essentially, on the bench or on the field. And these are all things that he's willing to do for this team. Help bring Cody Kessler along. Help get RG3 back on track along with the rest of the coaching staff. So it's curious to see how this is going to play out, because we do have a legitimate quarterback competition on our hands with the Browns. RG3 has been doing a lot of things right, but again, we're talking about OTAs. We're not talking about padded practices. We're talking about throwing against air. He's not going to get hit. He's not getting sacked.
Right.
So we'll have to see what happens once training camp turns into preseason.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you see things shaking out with the Browns? Who do you think ends up being the week one starter? Do you think it's McCown or Griffin or Kessler at this very, very early stage in the process?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'll qualify this by saying I don't think it matters too much, because really what the Browns are about this year is
rebuilding.
It's getting their footing under Hugh and trying to
establish that culture.
The stage for how you're going to go forward.
I mean, they drafted 14 players. And five of them
exactly.
are receivers.
It's going to be a young team regardless.
Yeah.
I'll say that I thought RG3 going there was the best thing that could have happened to RG3.
Pairing him with Hugh Jackson, wherever Hugh Jackson would have landed as a coach.
Right, that's what I mean, is that he's
going to
go – now he's finally in a position where he's with a coach who's going to want to work with him, which he hasn't had his entire career.
He really hasn't had, yeah.
Right, and because it's been him against the coaches before. And by all accounts, it sounds like he was somewhat humbled by a lot of the experience that
he's had
in Washington.
He's learned a lot. And
he's still a very unique talent. He's still relatively young. I think that basically what they did was take a flyer on him to say, maybe we can turn this guy back into, you know, a potential NFL star type. And
sure.
But at the same time, they weren't overly invested in him like they would have been had they
traded the farm for him
in 2012.
Michael Holmgren tried to trade the entire draft to get up to number one to get Andrew Luck. Ursay was not about that life.
That actually probably wouldn't have been bad for the Browns if he would have been able to pull that off. But regardless, Just for whatever else, whoever else.
Guy, I think there's only one guy left on the team from the 2012
that's exactly,
draft. Anyway.
That's exactly what I mean. So, but regardless, I'd say that they're not overly invested in RG3. If you can turn them around
financially,
if you can turn them around, then that's a boon for your team because then you have a quarterback for at least a couple years, very likely.
Yeah. Totally. And you have Kessler.
Kessler's your drafty, your developmental guy. I wouldn't expect much of out of him this year.
No.
And unless he's lighting it up, in which case maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. But you know, it's more, you know, Hugh working with the young guy and develop him and see what they get out of him. I think it makes the most sense, at least for now, you know, until we get through training camp and all that, to just assume that McCown's going to start. At the beginning of the season. The question is what happens as the season progresses? Because
sure.
McCown obviously has the most recent experience going. He's still a solid player, I think. And you know, he's shown the ability to be that mature leader type quarterback,
yeah.
Which is what they need. They, especially on a team with that much youth,
sure.
To have a veteran quarterback on the field, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me, obviously. But like I said, I think a lot of it should depend on how things go throughout the season. Can he stay healthy? Because we've seen him get hurt a few times over the past few years. Does RG3 have anything left, or is that going to be just a failed experiment?
And everything,
you know?
Wore him down. Or?
Can the kid get going well enough that they feel comfortable putting him into games? What's their record look like in late November? And you know,
and what does that mean for what do they want to start doing some experimenting
exactly.
with younger players?
Right, because it's a long term situation.
Yeah,
this isn't. They're not built to win right now.
They have paid a lot of lip service to the win now concept, and I think it's just a kind of. I think that's like some fan service.
We don't want to be out there
like,
saying we don't want to win.
It's not really just fans.
It's also other free agents.
Yeah,
and like,
we're not really planning to win immediately. So, you know what I mean? Yeah, you don't want to say that.
Right.
But obviously, when you're talking about a brand new regime, when they're overhauling things where they didn't re-sign a bunch of their own free agents.
They lost a lot of free agents.
They drafted 14
guys. And I think a lot of
guys.
That was purposeful, too, because
they're
changing
guys.
The culture in the locker room.
And there were some guys that they tried to retain where it didn't work out. But there are a lot of guys that they just let them walk. And then there are other guys, still, that they released. You know, Dwayne Bowe, Dante Whitner. So, and they drafted 14 guys. You know, so we're talking about overhaul here.
Exactly. And it's apparent to anybody that's like really looks at what they've done and to say that, you know,
it's going to be fixed in 6
yeah,
months.
Yeah, oh, we playoffs are bust. You know what I mean? Yeah, there's no way it's that attitude there. So, but you know, obviously they do want to win. Nobody wants to go into work if you're not trying to win. So
right,
they have to say that.
Of course. Now moving on to a couple of more interesting money type quarterback things. Let's talk about Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's been something I've been keeping my eye on all off season long. I've been waiting.
I can
attest
waiting, to that.
And waiting. Yeah, you know. I probably talk about Ryan Fitzpatrick like every other day.
Almost.
So basically, Fitzpatrick had a pretty strong season. In 2015, 31 touchdowns to 15 interceptions. Granted, his completion percentage could have been a little bit better. But, you know, he had the benefit of, you know, Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, which ended up being the most productive receiving tandem in the NFL. And everybody seemed to really like Fitzpatrick. All of his teammates, they liked his leadership. They liked his play. They all wanted him to come back. He was, you know, unrestricted free agent at the close of the season. And then all these rumblings come around that the Jets are trying to offer him a deal of $5 or $7 million per year. And obviously that's something Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to turn down. You're not going to pay a guy $5 to $7 million a year to be a starting quarterback in the NFL today. That's kind of an insult. I mean, what's happening with Tyrod Taylor? He's making $3.1 million this year because he wasn't signed to that deal to even be considered a starter. And now, you know, 2017 is going to open a whole new can of money worms for him. But then there was, you know, there were reports.
I bet he's next season's off season.
Oh, I'm going to be
next off season's like.
I'm going to be obsessed with it.
Contract weird situation. Yeah.
And so, but you know, at the time of this low ball offer, you know, news of this low ball offer was coming out. MMQB's Peter King, you know, he was basically saying, Listen, the Jets are in no hurry here. You know, we're months and months and months away from the start of training camp. They want to get something taken care of before then, but they're in no particular hurry. Expect at some point, you know, late spring, early summer, $12.5 million will be put on the table. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what's happened this week. So they've offered him, a three-year deal, giving him $12 million guaranteed for 2016. That's basically all the deep details we have about that now. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, whatever the terms of that is, apparently doesn't like it. He wants 1 year at $12 million, and the Jets are not willing to give him that. This stalemate is stupid. The Jets need to get a deal done with Ryan Fitzpatrick, one that the length of which he'll agree with and the money of which is agreeable to both sides. I've discussed this with you at length. What I think is that $12 million in 2016 should be fully guaranteed. And then he has a max cap hit of $16 million next year and then $18 million in 2018 with escalators, trigger dates, and all kinds of things in there. That would be the total cap hit. So that's not necessarily what he would make. I'm not talking full guarantees. It's good money. It escalates to the point where it's around mean for a well appreciated veteran starter in the league. Regardless, they need to get this deal done because I have no confidence in a Jets passing offense that is led by Geno Smith, because we've already seen that before, or the rookie Christian Hackenberg, who has major accuracy issues. And I just think this deal needs to get done. I mean, you have the offensive linemen. You have Decker. You have Brandon Marshall holding out from practices, complaining to the media for months. Get this deal done. We want this guy to be our starting quarterback. Sorry, Geno. This is our guy. You know, and when you have a quarterback that has the support of the locker room, who could move the ball down the field, who can help you win games, that's a deal you need to get done, right?
I mean,
do you have to be that patient about it?
I haven't quite understood their position on this. I mean, to lowball him like that, I mean, what do you expect him to just eat it up?
I mean, I understand that he's a 33-year-old journeyman. I understand that he hasn't had a consistently good year after year kind of performance in the NFL. But there is a reason that he is still in the NFL. There is a reason why the Jets made him their starter last year, and he threw 31 touchdowns and 15 interceptions with the aid of Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall. You know, there are reasons for his existence here.
We've seen him play pretty well in Buffalo.
I've seen him play well in Buffalo.
We've seen him play pretty well in – where was he after? Houston?
Houston.
We saw him play pretty well last year.
And a tough situation in Houston.
And especially if someone wants to point to, well, he hasn't had back-to-back successful years.
He could have one this year if they sign him.
Why do you want to sign him to more than 1 year then? Why are you refusing to give him a 1 year deal?
Because they're doing a thing where they're going to make it look like a 3 year deal, but it's really a 1 year deal, and he doesn't want to take that insult.
That's my point. It's like if you're going to basically pay him 12 years for this next year, but your stipulation is that he's got to sign a 3 year deal, so that way, in case he plays well enough to keep him, you want to be able to keep him for super cheap. That's absurd.
See, I think if you want to be able to keep him, if he plays well this year, you should keep him for market quarterback rate. And it's just, in fact, $16 and $18 million at this point is becoming below market rate because of the way that deals are structured and the increase in the salary cap, which is something I'm going to talk about in a minute here when we talk about Andrew Luck.
Exactly, and that's my point is that. I get your deal and it makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
if he plays well,
I don't know if he wants that deal. I don't know if that's what the 3 years that was on the table. I don't know what they offered.
But assuming let's say that contract is on the table,
he should take it.
He's guaranteed 12 or so this year. If he plays really well, there's a $16 million year next year.
There's a potential for $16 million that year.
And there's a potential for $18 the year after, or whatever.
Right.
And so then it's like,
I wouldn't sit around banking that Hackenberg in 2 years is going to be ready, because who knows? I mean, accuracy, you can't teach that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wasn't trust me, I was the last person to be in Hackenberg's corner. Yeah, I didn't think anybody should have drafted him.
Yeah,
but,
I'm just not into it.
I'm not wishing ill will on Jets or him. No. Whatever.
Hey,
good luck.
If
it works out,
career,
prove
good.
Me wrong. Prove me wrong, because sure. I'll eat my words. I won't ever say that.
I don't care if I end up being wrong about something.
But yeah, no, I think that he's very much a project. Very much a flyer, and maybe he works out, but I don't think that's anybody you should be banking on long term. And like you said, Geno's been there, done that. We've seen that guy.
And we know what he's
on the team
of.
Until his contract's done, and then I don't think he'll be around anymore. It makes a lot of sense to make Fitzpatrick your quarterback now, and with your deal being. If he plays well, there's money for him. If he doesn't, it doesn't hurt to cut him. And
right.
And I don't see anything wrong with that. But short of that, if really what he's asking is just give me a one-year deal then for $12 million, and I'm thinking like –
And he's willing to not play. He's willing to not play at all this year if he doesn't get what he wants.
The difference between that and what they're offering him is that he's not on the hook to get less money if he plays well and they don't want to cut him.
Right.
Which doesn't make any sense to me why they're making that a stipulation. It's just like, well, fine, if he doesn't want to be on the, you know.
They're trying to be clever with it, and I think they're handling it wrong.
Well, we'll see how it works out.
And I think
it
doesn't help that this is happening in the New York media market, and it's the Jets quarterback and all of that.
That's
you know
a big part
I mean?
Of it, too, for sure.
So moving on to another discussion of money here. Andrew Luck. It's his contract year. He's set to be an unrestricted free agent in 2017, but that is not going to happen. Colts owner Jim Irsay has made it clear that sometime in July, whether around July 4th or at least before the start of training camp, they're going to get a long-term deal done that's apparently going to make him the highest-paid player in the NFL, which makes him the highest-paid player in the NFL ever, essentially.
Because salaries are higher than ever, yeah.
And salaries are higher than ever. And so that's what I think is interesting, is that people are going to see this. They're going to say, oh, my God, 6 years, $130 million, you know, this guaranteed money is out of control. All the average per year, $25 million a year or whatever. And they're going to flip out. And, you know, I make it part of my work covering the NFL to make sure that I make it clear to people that 6 years and $130 million is more likely 4 years and $190 million. If we're real talking this. And the other thing to consider in terms of bank breaking in this situation, you got to remember the salary cap is going up precipitously every year. In 2013, it was $123.6 million per team, not counting what teams would carry over, right? This year, it was $155.27 million. Okay, we're talking an increase of over $30 million over the course of just a handful of seasons.
Yeah, just 3 years.
So when you have another $30 million to spend on your cap, giving someone like Andrew Luck what appears to be a historic bank-breaking contract, it doesn't break the bank. It doesn't, because your bank just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger every
right.
year.
Right. I mean, assuming all that will increase, which I think is a very
yes.
safe assumption.
Yes, it is.
I completely agree that, you know, Andrew Luck is one of those guys that's worth it. That he should be getting, when he's up for a contract, he should be getting some blockbuster deal because, you know, that is, and I'm a strong supporter of his. And
as they can give him some receiving and offensive line and run game and defense help, so it's not all on his shoulders all the time.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not necessarily saying I think that even Indy is the best spot for him, but I don't see him leaving there. You
of
know,
course not.
If
no.
they, especially if they're going to throw the Brinks truck up. You know
well,
what I mean?
Of course,
so
of course not.
As long as they don't offend him with this stuff,
they're not going to offend
which they're not
him
going to
because
they're
going to
get it done early and all that. No,
yeah, they're
going to
get done.
It's going to be gaudy
be done
numbers.
Month and a half.
It's going to be gaudy numbers for sure, but it makes way more sense to do it now than before you get into next year, next offseason, because then there's numbers have all gone up at that point. And that's why it makes way more sense to get
exactly.
him locked in now.
And here's the thing to think about, because the way the cap keeps going up and up, you talk about 5-6 years ago, a quarterback with an average per year of $18 to $20 million was just like, oh my God, this is like the most elite level quarterback of all time. And now you're talking about $18 to $20 million a year for
Osweiler.
Good quarterbacks or Osweiler quarterbacks, you know? We're talking over $20 million you know, heading towards $30 million. Some quarterback is going to have an average per year of $30 million a year, whether it's Andrew Luck next month or somebody else in 2 years or a year. Because it's just the nature of if the cap goes up, all the salaries should have an incremental rise from, like, you know, from what you're willing to give for a second contract or a contract extension. You're going to give a little bit more, you know, and when it's a top tier player, your franchise quarterback, the face of your franchise, Andrew Luck, it's going to be even higher. And that's just the law of the quarterback payday.
Yeah, pretty much.
So it's been a very interesting offseason, to say the least, at the quarterback position. And given that the Andrew Luck contract, the quarterback battles for numerous teams, and the Ryan Fitzpatrick stalemate have yet to wrap themselves up, we got a lot to talk about there probably throughout the rest of the summer.
Absolutely.
It's going to just be interesting to see what these rookies end up doing, if they do anything this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect too much.
Yeah. I wouldn't expect too much because I wasn't too excited about this year's quarterback class. Anyway.
Not a lot of guys can come into the league and just light it up. And, like, even some of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
And that's what bums me out, is that people think that quarterbacks have to, like, first-round picks or rookie quarterbacks have to come in, start right away, and light it up, or else you're a bust.
Right.
When 10 years ago, you draft a quarterback, you wouldn't start him right away if you didn't have to.
No, it's because, like, well, he's a rookie. Why would I start him?
Yeah, he's a rookie. Why would I start him? And now it's like, he's a rookie. Why wouldn't I start him?
Oh, they just drafted him, and they paid him a bunch of money, so why wouldn't he start, you know? They're obviously going in a new direction.
It's an investment. It's an investment of money and time. It's not just when you draft a guy, especially in the first round. You're not, you know, regardless of position, quarterback, linebacker, whatever, you take a guy, you draft him in the first round, maybe he becomes a starter as a rookie, maybe he doesn't. But what you're really doing is investing time in here. You're not cutting a first-round draft pick unless something crazy happens. You
right.
know what I mean? During his first contract. You have 4 years, and then you can decide to pick up his fifth-year option if you want. So you have up to 5 years to invest, develop, and try to get a return on your investment of these round one draft picks. So I don't see why I feel like there's more pressure. There should be more pressure on getting production of a third or fourth round draft pick being productive immediately. Because of that situation, there's not as much of financial or time invested.
No, that makes sense.
Because you're not gonna move on.
The thing is, there's this long-standing belief that. And I'm not saying I disagree, that the best experience you can get, you know, the best way to develop a quarterback is to give them game experience. So you have to get them in the game to play so that way you can get the game experience. That way, you know, you basically it's.
But he needs to be ready to have the game experience. He needs to be ready for that.
And that's what I'm saying is
they
I think
need to
that
be developed.
The problem
need to develop
is
a player
that I don't
to get to that point.
I don't think that model works for every guy.
No.
And I think there's some guys that come in and that's the best thing they can do is get in the game and play. And there's other guys that probably need to sit for a while.
And get seasoned and get used to the NFL.
The problem
what offense are you coming from? What offense are you going into? That might take some time.
The problem is if you take a year and say that this guy is just going to be developmental, then you only have a couple years left on his contract to figure out if he's worthwhile to keep around long term. You know what I mean? Before he actually gets game experience.
I mean, if you give him a year, you still have up to four additional years on this round one pick.
No, I'm not saying I don't agree with you. I'm saying that that's that argument.
Sure.
It's just like, well, if we don't get him out there, it's going to be another – if we wait till next year to put him on the field in actual game situations, it's going to take halfway through that season
before we realize
he's going to be good or not.
No, the real argument is fans saying, what did we draft him for then if your round one – player isn't starting as a rookie. What did we take him for then?
I don't know, he can't
start right away.
I don't know. I don't think anybody should be listening to fans.
Well, I mean, but people hear people say that all the time.
Sure,
you know what
sure.
I mean? Well, why did they draft? Why would they even draft this guy in the first round if he's not even going to play?
Right.
Because it's not about the first year of a rookie's experience. It's about the entire process of developing a college player into an NFL player, and that is not an overnight or a summertime off-season training camp process.
Right.
In many ways.
And some guys can deal with the lumps you would take as a rookie quarterback running a team that is rebuilding and not having the greatest success, you know, right off the bat, you know, as because that's just hard to expect.
Right.
And but and other guys have a harder time dealing with that kind of thing. So
of
it's
course.
Just like I said, it's I think it's very specific to the individual. And the problem is that the common thought.
Is not specific to individuals. It's just a very, broad statement.
Yeah, it's very one, you know, just one thought. And so, anyway.
Well, I think that's a good place to stop this week's...
going to wrap it up?
This week's show. I, of course, am your host. I am Andrea Hengst. I cover the National Football League at Sports on Earth at sportsonearth.com. And at The Comeback, that's thecomeback.com. And I cover the Cleveland Browns for Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report, which you can find at cle.scout.com. And, of course, you can also find me on Twitter at fball_Andrea, FBALL_Andrea.
And, again, I'm Brian. I outside of co-hosting this podcast with Andrea and producing the podcast with Andrea, I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
So thanks to all of you for your patience during this time where we've been away from the podcast here. Hopefully,
or welcome if it's your first time.
Welcome if it's your first time. We love all of our listeners here, and hopefully we got some happy folks out there who are pleased to listen to our show again after a few months away. So
well, it's I think that's the thing is we're just getting into that point. Once you're into June, then it's like you can almost taste it. It's starting to feel around the corner, and that's when people really want to get ramped up. I mean, there's at this
I'm ready
point
to get ramped up.
At this point, there's only two hockey teams and two basketball teams left. So you know, there's not a lot going on with these other sports. Baseball's full swing for sure, but like you know, as far as there's not a lot of that noise that. You know, the beginning parts of the NBA playoffs where there's lots of teams and there's – or college basketball and all that stuff that's going on.
Now it's just like – all right,
now it's like, oh, we're really feeling like we're almost there. So I think it's time
– we're past the halfway point, too, between the start of the season and the end of the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
So.
On the downslide.
And we got a lot of stuff to talk about. So we will be back next Thursday and every Thursday until the regular season starts, and then we'll be back on Wednesdays here – at the F-Ball NFL podcast. So again, thanks for everybody joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Later.
Peace.
Damn, say you wanted 2 16s. I'ma give you 2 16s. You say all you want is 2 16s. Then I'ma give you 2 16s, yeah. I'ma give you 2 16s, yeah. I'ma give you 2 16s, yeah. I'ma give you 2 1 2 1 2 2 2. Listen as I run through both of these tales I wish I could undo.